All right, greetings everyone. This is Chris Dixon, and welcome back to another episode of the Tunnel Vision Podcast. Hope y'all are doing good and well on this wonderful Monday. Hope y'all have been doing good and well these past few days. Since the last episode, this particular episode, I'm going to be going in into a book study, a mini-series. It pretty much is built from a few chapters from the book The Magician by Philip Cooper, A Study in Effective Magic. This particular book is very popular when it comes down to the practice of magic. It came out in the 90s, so it's a pretty old book. But this is a very good book, especially when it comes down to people just getting into this particular information and practice and just want to get a better understanding and a thorough understanding on what magic is and what the basics of it is about. And in this particular book, Philip Cooper, you know, does an excellent job in removing the superstition and the misinformation that's out about magic and how it operates. And he pretty much breaks it down very thoroughly and plainly. So if you're someone who has always been skeptical about this particular practice, this is an excellent book to help you dispel those particular beliefs and misconceptions that you may have. So I'm going to be going in to this book and pretty much just build on some good material. I've just been reading and refreshing, you know, my mind. Pretty much just want to focus on the most important aspects of this particular practice, you know, as you begin your journey in the practice. And that's really understanding how the mind works, more specifically the subconscious mind, because that's what he builds on a lot in this particular book, on the importance of the subconscious mind and understanding how it generates our day-to-day, you know, reality, you know, what we believe to be true and real. The subconscious mind is what makes it real. So he builds a lot on the subconscious mind in this particular book. And the first chapter is Magic is the Ultimate Science. So I'm going to be building from this particular chapter first. Of course, it being the first chapter. So I'm going to be building on some of the things that he touched on. And I'm going to also share, you know, my own personal insights, share with you all some experiences, some of my experiences that I've had on this journey, as it relates to, you know, some of the things that he's saying. All right. So starting out with the first chapter, Magic is the Ultimate Science. This book is about magic, true magic. It will help you understand the subject, work out your own rituals, and use magic as it is meant to be used, as an aid to a better life and an understanding of that life. Contemporary study of magical studies confuses novice and practitioners alike because it contains a number of outmoded rules and superstitions that do nothing for the art and science of magic. This book has been written to help restore magic to its rightful place in our creative cycle. True magic is not complicated. True magic is not complicated. Magic belongs to anyone who wishes to use it. True magic comes from within the individual, not from some initiate or secret society. After all, who initiated the first initiate? Magic is a highly individual and personal creative process. And to be effective, each individual must formulate his or her own inner temple, contact his or her power source, and work magic in his or her own way. Sorry, let me... All right, had to get the music back going. All right. Let's see. The basic rules and laws are the same for everyone, and these will now be given to you. From then on, it is up to you. Let us start by defining just what magic is and what it is not. Magic is not dressing up in brightly colored robes, chanting strange incantations, or collecting grades and titles. This may flatter the ego and be of limited use in some cases, but it is not magic. Path working and meditation are not magic. They are tools / aids. So what is magic? Magic, true magic, is the art of using controlled thought to produce a result. If you doubt this, then ask yourself, why are you interested in magic, or why do you involve yourself with it? Perhaps you feel it is right for you. It is, but maybe not in the way that you previously thought. So this is a good basic definition of magic. There are different definitions of magic that people have, you know, came up with, you know, who are practitioners, you know. But everybody's gonna have their different perspectives and their own perspectives of magic. And his definition of magic is a very good one. Simply using controlled thought to produce a result. And I do hold a similar perspective to what magic is. And my perspective is using your subconscious mind, your will, and your intentions to carry out a specific result. That's my perspective and my understanding of what magic is, you know, based on my own experiences, as well as, of course, my study. A lot of people, when they look at this practice, you know, they get the impression that it operates based on what they see in movies, you know, such as Harry Potter. Most people have the impression that magic can get them rich, a luxury lifestyle, that luxury relationship, you know, different things of that nature. And a lot of people think that magic can just, you can manifest almost anything you want at a split second. And that's not necessarily true. You know, real magic, you know, it takes time, you know, especially when you understand, you know, what being practical is, you know, is about. You know, a lot of people look at it, like I said, like it's some fantasy type of practice where, you know, they can manifest, you know, a multitude of money overnight, and different things of that nature, and that's not necessarily, you know, how this practice, you know, operates. This path is about redefining, you know, your life and what truth is, you know, for you, and building and creating a life that, of course, that you want and desire, but most importantly, the life that you need, so to speak. You know, that's my personal perspective on why somebody, you know, should get into magic, who's interested, you know, you should want to get into it to better your life, face your obstacles and overcome them, and, you know, gain control over your own self. You know, it's really about mastering self, right? It is much more to this practice than getting more worldly things. And I'm not saying that you can't do magic for those things and get those things, but that is not the primary blueprint of what this practice and path is about, right? So when you deal with the reality of it all, it's not what you see in movies, right? It's definitely something that is very challenging. You know, it's a path. It's a path that's going to bring forth real deal change into your personal life, right? So a lot of people, you know, they don't really understand that part, you know, because they're going about it as, you know, it's just a way, you know, to get the things I want on a material level. And it's much more to that, right? So it's very important that you understand, you know, the reasons that you want to get into this practice. And, you know, it's very important that you be very practical in what it is that you want for yourself. So pretty much get into this practice for, you know, good reasons, you know, good reasons to, you know, like I said, help you grow and evolve spiritually. You know, that should be the primary reason why you get into this, right? But to continue forward, before starting any magical work, we need to look at how magic works in the light of reason. All thought produces results. By thought, I mean deliberate thought activated by the will, not daydreaming or normal conscious thought, which is analytical, critical, and makes comparisons for evaluation. Will thought produces results, physical results, and thought uses power to create. In normal life, we are generally unaware of this process, yet it happens all the time as we create around us all that we desire or do not desire. Magic is the art of knowing how to use this creation process to produce results that are desirable. Before going any further, we will take a careful look at the mental process used in creative magical thinking. There are three areas of the mind which concern us: the conscious mind, the subconscious, and the will. The subconscious mind is the powerhouse. It creates around us all that it believes to be true, according to the instructions that we give it. Everything around you here and now has been created for you by your subconscious mind and has been attracted to you like a magnet. It is impossible to stop this creation process. Even when you leave Earth life, it will carry on creating for you and serving you, for that is its purpose, to attract to you all that you need. It does not reason, it just accepts instructions that are believed to be in your best interest. Before it will change its creative pattern, it has to be convinced that the new instruction is valid. This is where the will and the conscious mind come into the picture, right? And this is very important to understand, especially when it comes down to your childhood, because what we were given, the things that we call facts, the things that we call truth, that we believe, right? I'm going through these. Sorry, music keep going on break. Like I said, when you look back on your childhood, the things, and even at the age that we're at now, you know, your adult age, you know, most of what you were given to be factual or the truth was given to you by somebody else. So what was true and factual for another person, it was passed down to you. So your parents, you know, our parents are the main ones, the first ones that have control over our life, you know, as children, you know, when we come out of the womb. Soon as you come out of the womb, you know, it's a package, you know, waiting on you. And in that package is different beliefs, customs, you know, ideologies, things of that nature that's getting ready to be instilled into your subconscious. And these beliefs and these customs and traditions, things of that nature, you really have no choice, you know, as a child, but to accept them, you know, for what they are, and to accept them as truth. You know, you're not really given the opportunity and the freedom to determine, you know, whether those things are going to be true and valid, you know, for you. You know, that doesn't happen until you are later, until later on in life when you get older and you actually start to experience life and have your own experiences. And that's when you start to redefine what truth is for you and what's factual for you, right? But as children, you know, we don't have that ability to say, you know, no, we don't want to go along with this, right? Because as a child, you really don't have a true deep desire to want to know, you know, where it comes from. You know, you just go along with it, right? So that's why it's very important, you know, especially when, if you were raised in a religious, you know, household, you know, whether that be Christianity, Islam, Judaism, you know, Buddhism, you know, so forth and so forth. But in most cases, most of us was raised, you know, either Christian, Islam, you know, Judaism, you know, etc. Right? And you know how deeply the programming can be, so to speak. So understand that the programming began, you know, when you was a young child, right? And we went along with it. You know, we never did question or investigate anything that our parents passed down to us. You know, we just went along with it, right? The will has to get past the barriers of the conscious mind. No matter how strong the will is to change something, it has to convince the conscious mind before that new instruction can reach the subconscious. The conscious mind only sees facts in the light of present subconscious creative patterns, which is why some people are unable to see a fact glaring at them. It is contrary to their deep beliefs. And this is what I just touched base on. When you were very young and the critical faculties were wide open, your subconscious mind was trying to establish what your will wished. Most children are presented with facts that are accepted without question. These facts are totally believed, and so for you, they become true. Some of these facts were probably true, some of them were probably untrue. Nevertheless, they were all accepted. The subconscious mind will seek to reinforce the conscious mind when a new direction is given to it, and so the whole process becomes a circle. The more the will is exercised, the more the conscious mind looks for facts to substantiate its previous beliefs. So new results are impossible or at best extremely slow, for constant expression of the will eventually gets some reaction from the subconscious mind, even if it takes a lifetime. So, you know, when you begin, you know, what we like to call the deconstruction and reconstruction process, you know, the deprogramming, you know, of old beliefs and the reprogramming of new beliefs, it can be very challenging, you know, especially if you are passionate about a particular belief that you received from your childhood. You know, for example, you know, religion, you know, our parents believed in the same religion, our grandparents believed in the same religion, our great-grandparents. So for some people, it's very difficult to address the traditional beliefs and programmings because it's passed down from generations prior, you know, to you. And then when it gets to you, you know, it's automatically expected that you go along with the same programming, right? So when it comes down to this particular path and you begin to deconstruct your mind, your subconscious of old beliefs, it can be very challenging. It's a very long process. It's something that is not going to happen, you know, overnight, right? It is a continuously day-by-day process, you know. And in most cases, you know, we're going to spend the rest of our life deprogramming and reprogramming. So it's not really going to stop, you know. It's really just becoming adapt to change, you know, when it comes. Because like I said, when you start to deal with magic, you're going to open up the subconscious mind for new programmings and change. And it's going to be a consistent process, right? And I can tell you that from firsthand experience. It has been a struggle, you know, letting go of certain beliefs, patterns, you know, ways of thinking, you know, that I've always had throughout my life. And as I continue to grow and get older and go deeper into my practice, you know, I notice how challenging it is when, you know, certain thought processes start to change, you know, reprogramming my mind to, you know, get control over my triggers, you know, things that trigger me, you know, learning how not to get angry and hostile, you know what I'm saying, when something triggers me, right? So learning how to control my emotions, learning how to control my thought process. And these are things that I'm currently experiencing at the moment. You know, it's day by day, you know. So magic really does generate, you know, a change in your subconscious, right? So continuing forward, how do we cause a new creative pattern? Why bother? And what has this to do with magic? Quite simply, the subconscious mind is there to create for you whatever you wish. It knows no limits and is neither good nor bad. It just is. Give it an instruction and it will carry it out to the letter. Surely this is worth bothering with. There are many ways of getting through false beliefs to the creative mind. And magic is the best way for some of us. True magic, free from superstition and false ideas, gets results. And that is the purpose of this book, to show you how to do this. So how do you get the subconscious mind to respond to your will, whatever that may be? By simply using two facts and combining these with positive thought. They are a suspension from the critical conscious mind into belief, right? And belief and, of course, faith is something that's very crucial in magic. You know, just like everything, any other spiritual system or religious system that talks about the importance of faith, having faith in your works and the things that you do, those things are still a important prerequisite in magic. You know, if you don't have faith in your practice, you know, you're not going to see the results that you are looking for. So faith plus belief is very important. You know, you have to believe in this practice. You have to believe in the power of your own subconscious mind, right? If you don't believe in the power of your subconscious and the power of the divine or God, you know, inside of you, you're not gonna see the results that you are, that you're looking for, right? The idea of combining positive thought with the suspension of the critical conscious mind and belief is used in meditation and self-hypnosis and yields results of a fashion. But by far the best way is to use controlled imagination or visualization. Very important when it comes down to doing your work. Visualization is key. Anything visualized and believed will actualize physically. And the more potent the visualization, the better the result. Magic uses a special imagery called imaginary language called symbology. Symbols are geometric patterns of power that the subconscious mind understands, that combine with other visual imagery that enhances the effect, as you will see later. And one of the most powerful forms of magic, when it's dealing with symbols, when you're dealing with symbology, are sigils. Sigils are symbols, personally created symbols, by the individual, the magician, so to speak, that has a magical intention that's hidden within it, right? That only the subconscious mind understands. You know, the conscious mind does not understand it, but the subconscious mind understands it, you know? And I'm gonna go over what sigils are a little bit more deeper a little bit later, but those that are already on this path and familiar, you know, you understand the power of sigils, right? An example of a sigil would be McDonald's. You know, the McDonald's logo, the M, you know, that would be a magical symbol, because that symbol communicates to the subconscious mind in ways that a person's conscious mind does not understand. So restaurants and different businesses, you know, use symbols, you know, as ways of marketing. But on a metaphysical and occult level, they use symbology to lure in their customers, you know. So sigils are highly used by different restaurants and stores and things of that nature, right? That's why if, when you start a business, you create your own brand, your own imagery, you know, to represent your business, right? And that's what gets the attention of, you know, customers, right? Magic without this inner working is merely superstition and theoreticals. And those of you who find you have trouble with this should remember that clear pictures are not necessary. Just know that the image is there. The more relaxed you are, the easier it is to visualize. So bear this in mind. Tension is the enemy of ritual, right? So when you go into any ritual, you know, it's very important that you are relaxed and focused. You know, whether you are getting ready to work with a spirit, whether you're getting ready to do candle magic, sigil magic, divination, you know, etc. It's very important to be in a focused and relaxed state, right? You want to make sure that you're relaxed and you're free from any tension, because those types of emotions is what messes up a ritual, right? So it's very important that you get your emotions and mind in order before you go into ritualistic work, right? Any magical symbol is there to be used, not prayed to. It is there to be used and understood. Does anyone really understand the pentagram, or has it been accepted because someone else accepted it, who in turn thought it would be a good idea to work it into lodge rituals? After all, it is traditional, or is it? So, you know, that's another good, you know, key point to deal with. It's very important that you understand, you know, the types of symbols that you use, and just overall understanding the type of magic that you're doing. You know, it's very important that you understand, you know, what you're getting ready to do, and have a solid, practical approach to it, right? Not just diving into it without really understanding, you know, what something means, right? Very important to consider that as well. Belief and magic are inseparable. Magic cannot work without belief, and belief is the simplest form of magic. There are, of course, different types of belief. On the one hand, there is blind belief in something, usually without reason. Superstition is an example of blind belief, and superstition has no place in magic. Right? Very important to understand that. True belief is another matter. It is sane, logical, will stand up to any test, and can be proved to the person who has it. True belief comes from faith in true facts and cosmic laws, and usually needs a lot of self-searching to obtain. The best way to get to truth is to ask why until you get there. Never accept someone's line of thinking until you get to the truth by asking why. Then, when you know why, you can accept and believe, or reject and disbelieve. Remember that disbelief is also a form of belief, and it can cause the subconscious to actualize. All beliefs actualize. This is why superstitions work, because for some they are believable, even if to others they may appear silly. So there's a saying, I want to say, the famous Dick Gregory said this, and he always said, question everything, right? Don't just take something and believe in it at face value without you thoroughly knowing and understanding what it is you're getting ready to accept as truth and facts, you know, into your consciousness, right? And that's how you open up your mind, you know, that's how you start to think on a much more higher level, is when you start to ask questions, when you start to ask why, you know. That's what triggers, you know, higher consciousness and awareness, you know, when you actually start to ask the question why, you know. So it's very important that, you know, you challenge, you know, information, you know, even the things that I'm saying, you know, don't just take what I'm saying and just run with it as truth. You know, take this information, study it for yourself, investigate it, and, you know, keep what resonates and disregard what doesn't resonate, you know. So even with, you know, my teachings, you know, don't take what I'm saying at face value. Always question, you know, information until you find what is valid for you, right? To change blindly accepted beliefs requires the constant use of the will, the critical faculties, and the question why. We need to explore our subconscious beliefs, because if we do not, we probably will have a lot of confusion within that may keep us from moving ahead or keep us from being able to work with magic, right? If you believe something, it will come true, since belief will activate the will in a positive way, which will then bypass the unbelieving conscious mind. The reverse is also true. The will can be exercised to change old beliefs for better ones, for better results, for a better life. Magic presents symbols, via the imagination to the subconscious mind in believable form. So that's why it's very important to use any symbol, you know, the right way. You know, it's very important that you understand the type of symbol that you're going to use in your rituals. You know, if you're going to use the pentagram, if you're going to use the hexagram in your rituals, understand the reason, or to understand how the symbol operates, so to speak. So, you know, get familiar, you know, with different symbols that you resonate with. One symbol that I still use in my workings is the hexagram. Sometimes I use the hexagram to bind certain spirits to for a certain period of time, and then I release them, you know, after the request is fulfilled or my ritual is complete and they're ready to be released. So the hexagram is used in binding, you know, certain spirits, so to speak. And that's one of my main symbols I use, you know. So it's very important, like I said, to understand the symbols and their purpose, right? Unfortunately, people built many undesirable qualities into visual images. Let's see. Yeah, let's touch base on this a little bit. Each and every one of us is using power all the time. As students of magic, we become aware of this power and use it as we will. The most heated debates that concern the use of magic involve discussion of black and white magic. It is worthwhile to explore power as it relates to black and white magic so that you can understand how to use power correctly. We were created to create whatever we will, using power and exercising our right of free choice. What we create in our minds will actualize. Once the subconscious powerhouse accepts the idea, we are responsible for all our creative actions in the same way that we are responsible for the ripples on the surface of a pool into which we have just dropped a pebble. God and I, and by God I mean the ultimate creative entity, does not approve or disapprove. Any action we take is our choice and we must live with it. This is the real idea of karma. We are responsible for whatever we do. This is not a divine threat, it is common sense. It does not mean we have to be holy and saint-like and suffer all kinds of penalties if we make a mistake. As we sow, so shall we reap. So it makes sense to sow the things we want and try not to affect others adversely, right? So that's where this, the whole concept of black and white magic, you know, comes from. These labels were coined together later on in time to pretty much identify the type of magic a practitioner was utilizing. So really the only thing that exists is really energy or magic. Some people will say just magic, or some people will say energy. And how this energy is used will determine if it fell into the category of black or white. Black was commonly seen as baneful and destructive magic, you know, hexing, cursing, things of that nature. And white magic was magic done for positive reasons, healing and and those forms of magic. But in actuality, on an absolute sense, there really is no quote-unquote black or white magic. It's really just how a person uses energy, right? But on a relative sense, you know, as it pertains to how people identify themselves with their practice and the forms of magic that they are drawn to. Sometimes it draws or it falls in line with black or white magic, so to speak. And even with black magic, it's not necessarily tied to anything that's bad or evil. Black, or what we would call chaos or dark matter energy, can be used to overcome obstacles. So for an example, you know, like I gave my story on my Kalipothic journey, you know, working with the tunnels of Set, going through the 22 tunnels of Set, and going through the shells or the husk of the tree of knowledge or the tree of death. That particular system of magic would be considered, you know, dark magic, because you're dealing with the shadow or the true self, so to speak. You can also say the subconscious mind, but it's addressing the darkness within, you know, learning how to heal the shadow and integrate the shadow, you know, with your higher self, so to speak. And that's where you get the term, you know, shadow work, you know, that Carl Jung coined together, you know, dealing with repressed emotions, traumas, addictions, fears, and pretty much these internal obstacles and battles that hold you back. You know, that would be considered a form of black magic or dark magic, or what some people would call dark alchemy, right? So it's really on the context on how the energy is being used and the purpose that the practitioner is going about, right? But, you know, these terms exist, you know, still, but in actuality, it's really just energy and how energy is utilized, right? Power is neither positive nor negative, good nor bad, nor any other division we can think of. It just is, and it is abundant and given freely, so that we may create freely and hopefully with wisdom. It does not help those who are deemed to be good. It does not put down those who are deemed to be bad. There is no such thing as good and evil. It is all a question of attitude towards any given situation. What is good for one person may be totally bad for another. We have been conditioned to think that certain things are good and others bad. But are they really so? Perhaps it is a case of accepting lines from the past again. Each one of us must decide what is good and bad for us, and then use our power center to achieve that end. It is one thing to make a mistake. It is quite something else to knowingly do something you consider bad or evil. Like attracts a like. Every cause has an effect. If you sow what you know to be evil, then you will reap evil. And for some, that is just what they want, strange as it may seem. And that is truth to that, right? So, you know, pretty much what he's saying, you know, from an absolute perspective, you know, good and evil, it all boils down to how a person sees something or perceives something, right? To a certain degree, in my perspective, you know, good and evil does exist, but only, you know, from the relative perspective, like as it pertains to, you know, how we behave and the things we do, you know, as human beings. But it's really boiling down to the perspective, you know, that one has of something, right? And it really comes back to the principle of cause and effect. You know, what you sow, you reap what you sow. And you have to deal with the outcome, whether it's good or bad, right? We're almost done. Let's see. if you tell yourself often something enough, you will believe it. And if you believe it, it will come true. If you're at present hard up, confused, searching for something, trying to evolve or coping with life's endless problems, then remember that all this is happening because you are causing it to happen. As far as your subconscious mind is concerned, this is what you really want. Most of these wants are pushed into your subconscious before you are old enough to resist. But nevertheless, they are there. So why not exchange them for the things you really want? You really do want. Throw away dogma, superstition, and wrong thinking. Ask why, and why again. Evolve to the knowledge of you and your needs using creative magical power to this end. Right? So it, you know, the more that you question, you know, and seek out, you know, deeper knowledge, you know, eventually you will find it. What's the saying? Ask and it shall be given to you. You know, seek and you shall find. Knock and the door will be open. Right? The more that you continue to seek knowledge itself, seek, you know, to overcome and address obstacles that you deal with internally, you know, eventually you will get those results. Right? But you have to want to address them, and most importantly, you have to come into the acceptance, you know, of your problems, right? That's step one. You know, you have to first accept that you messed up, right? You first have to accept that. And that's the only way that the true healing can begin, right? Let's see, I'm almost done. Those who teach that desire is wrong are supreme fools. Desire is like a magnet. It pulls things towards you, both good and bad. When you are detached like this, you are in a unique position to look at your desires so that you can decide which are of value and which are true. Really and truly, you are not actually giving up anything. You are becoming selective. So, when you understand, you know, you do have the life, or you do have the ability to create, you know, the life that you want, need, and desire. It's really understanding, you know, balance, you know, understanding that it's nothing wrong at all to have desires, you know, and you have a right to manifest those desires into your life, right? But it's also understanding that, you know, the importance of remaining true to, you know, gaining, you know, mastery over yourself. You know, that's always the most important thing, you know, with magic. You know, get into magic for, you know, for change, you know, to grow and evolve spiritually. And the things that you desire, you know, will fall into place, you know, behind that, right? So, you know, all of these things technically go hand in hand. You know, none of them should be suppressed and overlooked. Right. Let's see. Magic is the science of using and understanding the power of the subconscious mind to achieve a desired result, a physical result. Time and time again, we will return to this simple yet powerful statement, and you will see how true this really is. Quite often, the physical end of magic is forgotten. It is of little use to spend a lot of time each day in a profound state of meditation and then fill up your notebooks with astral experiences and interesting information if you do not use it. Meditate by all means, but meditate for a purpose and an end result. With all real magic, there has to be a result, right? The word create is vitally important in magic. The whole idea is to create using power. And what I mean is that a magical act must have a physical result. Anything other than this can only be classified as failure. Magic is really and truly about getting results. Nothing else will do, right? And to close it out, he finishes up by saying, "Let me put the record straight once and for all. There is no such thing as black and white magic. First, there is energy, which is never ending, abundant, and given freely. It is neither positive nor negative. Second, there is you, and you have the right to use this energy. Third, there is free choice in the way in which you choose to use this energy. Use it destructively, negatively, or constructively and positively. Both give results. Energy conforms to patterns, and the understanding and use of these patterns is called magic. It is the intention which matters. If you knowingly use energy for destructive ends, you will use the same energy as you will if you use it for constructive ends. Destructive ends. Okay. Destruction could be called black and construction white. But even this is not accurate. What is right for one person may not be right for another. It is your choice and you must make it." All right. So always think about choice and intention, and let these be your guide, right? Do be patient and let the ideas in this book guide you to what is right for you. Magic is made in the mind, mainly by using the imagination. Do not confuse visualization with imagination. If you can see pictures in your mind clearly, this is well and good. Imagination is easy. We can all do it, as you will see. You have probably heard of the subconscious mind, and the way this can be influenced through hypnosis and so on to achieve results that were impossible under normal circumstances. But most importantly, always remember, the subconscious mind knows no limits and can achieve anything you wish, right? The doorway to your real magical potential is now open, and the magical process for you has begun. And that is all I'm going to touch base on. Been on here 53 minutes. But that concludes the first chapter, you know, of this particular book, Magic is the Ultimate Science. The next chapter is on the magical temple or psychic laboratory. And in this particular chapter, he goes into detail about how to create your magical space, right? In your personal space, whether that be your bedroom, a closet in your room, if you have a basement or a room in your basement, you know, pretty much just setting up your personal magical space. He also goes into how to create a magical space on the mental plane, right? And having a psychic laboratory or a magical temple within your mind. There's tons of practitioners who no longer utilize physical space like altars and stuff like that. Some practitioners just utilize their mind and just go to their space in their minds and even do work in their space on a mental level and still get results, right? So you can do it from the mental level, but you can also create your own physical space, you know, that you feel comfortable and connected to. I still got my altar. I got two, you know, I got an ancestral altar, and then I have my personal main altar. Right. I have certain archetypes what deities that I work in consort with, divination tools and things of that nature, sitting on it, right? So I still got my space on a physical level, but I also have on the mental plane, you know, the same thing. You know, I can just, even if I'm at work, you know, I can close my eyes and literally I can be at my altar, right? At my place. And everything is there. You know, I can see myself picking up something off the altar, and I can do the same thing in my mind as if I would do it if I was there in person, right? So really, they, you know, having a physical space and even having a magical space on the mental plane, you know, they go hand in hand as well. So he talks about that in this next chapter that I'm going to build on the next episode, right? But that's all I have for this first episode of this book study. We are building on The Magician, A Study in Effective Magic by Philip Cooper, right? Hope you all enjoyed it, and hope that you all will have a good rest of your day. If it's nighttime where you're at, or if it's daytime where you're at, whenever you're listening, hope that you all have a good one, and I'll talk to you all in the next episode. Peace.